With that, operator, I'll hand that back to you to open the line up for questions. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the pound or hash key. Once again, to ask a question, it's star one on your telephone. Your first question comes from the line of Brook Campbell-Crawford from J.P. Morgan. Please ask your question.
Operator, we can.
I can't hear.
Brook,
he's asking a question.
Are you on mute, Brook, or I can't hear you?
Yeah, good morning. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, Brook. Yep, that's it. Got it. Yep.
Thank you. Excellent. Thanks. So just a question on North America growth. So conditions continue to be characterized as challenging.
Yeah.
Just what do you think the market growth rate is in the U.S.? And I guess, why do you think it's sort of ticked down over recent years?
Yeah, I would say market growth, Brook, we should see in the 2%-3% at the 2%-3% level. I think it's fair to say that the conditions in North America today compared to 12 months ago are a little more muted. It's still strong, employment is still strong, and we've certainly had, you know, the effects of the government shutdown and those type of things. But, you know, we grew by circa 2% in underlying terms in the half. So I think the sort of market growth is 2 to 2.5 would be our expectations in the sectors in which we operate.
That's fair, thanks. And just a question on Aurora Visual. Just interested if you could provide an update in terms of revenue and EBIT at this point for this business, and if there's any more synergies that you could drive from those businesses. Thanks.
Well, let me firstly, we don't give specific revenue and EBIT for any of the business groups. What I would say is the synergy journey is continuing positively, and you may recall that the largest OV site is in Dallas, in Texas. So the addition of scale through the Bronco and Pollock operations will help us from a procurement point of view, certainly in the Texas market. And so I would expect that to continue to improve. I'm really pleased with the improvements in the top line and the quick recovery of the Toys R Us volumes. And I think the business is certainly moving in the right direction. We're not there yet, but certainly moving in the right direction.
Okay, great. Just one other one from me before I leave it is just the 4 million impact in Australasia for the second half. Is that before any recovery from price pass-throughs?
Brooke, the answer is yes. But I think in that sort of time frame, it's unlikely. We'll obviously do our best to recover what we can, but I think see that as a gross impact. But any customer pass-through at this point is unlikely to be significant.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of David Errington from Merrill Lynch. Please ask your question.
Morning, Nigel. Morning, Stu. Nigel, on your North American business, you just called out that your underlying business is growing 2%, 2.5%.
Mm-hmm.
When I look at your net growth, it's 3.2. You take off Bronco and Pollock, you're only 1.7 because Bronco and Pollock contributed 1.5. So the underlying business is only growing by 2, 2.5 if you exclude those acquisitions. Now, I'm being really generous here because I'm excluding those ERP and net effect of lost contracts in OV. If I was being a little harsh, I'd say they're just cost, ordinary costs of doing business.
Yep.
But even if I was really generous, I'd say that this business is just not going very well. What's the problem here? What's the true problem? Because even if you strip out the one-offs,
yep,
you're still growing well below the market. Now, are you exposed to poor customers? Like, are you exposed to the wrong end of town? Because my understanding of the US, it's probably as good as it's going to get. I mean, the Australian and US markets, you call that challenging conditions, but I mean, you're not going to get better conditions than Australia and the US at the minute. I mean, you're not exposed to emerging markets or anything like that. The US and Australia have been pretty robust. So what's the ultimate problem in the US at the moment? Because you obviously believe in it. You're investing a lot of money in it. What's the problem at the moment? What's the real problem that you have to get through in the next 6 to 12 months to make this a viable investment?
Okay, so let me just start with the last point, David. It is very much a viable investment. I think our returns on funds employed in North America is circa 20%. So it is certainly a viable investment from that point of view.
Well, I'm talking more the incremental investment. I mean, that's just probably due to historic cost of assets being very low, historic asset. But the incremental dollars that you're putting in, there's no way known that that's generating a good return. So and that's what drives value. It's the incremental, not the historic.
So no argument. I think I'm pretty confident, and I said today that we will get a 20% return on the two recent ones, for example. But to answer your question more broadly, there are three components to our North American business. So there's OV, which we've talked about before, and under the Aurora Packaging Solutions business, there is the Landsberg operations, so Landsberg Aurora, and manufacturing.
Yep.
Now, the manufacturing volumes in the last 9 months have declined, and we had some short-term opportunistic volumes that we had in fiscal 17 and part of 18 that we had for 18 to 24 months that we transitioned out of. So no surprise from our perspective at all in that regard, and we're back to normal levels.
Yep.
The OPS business, the focus over the last 18 months has been on existing customers to ensure that we didn't disrupt supply. We didn't let them down as a result of us going into putting SAP in. And we've all heard plenty of stories of businesses that have implemented SAP or a new ERP system more generally that have turned into disasters. We were determined that that was not going to be the case for our business with our customers. As a result of that, and I think I said this, as a result of that, David, our team spent a disproportionate amount of time on existing customers and existing business to make sure that things didn't slip through the cracks. So the focus on growth, which we traditionally have had, if I go back 2 years ago, we were delivering 4 to 5% growth, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Stu, in FY17, 16 and 15 as we had the business focused on growth. But the last 18 months, unashamedly, has been on the core business. So to answer your question, what do we need to do to get back to those growth rates, which, you know, we historically have done twice GDP.
Yeah.
What we need to do is get through the that SAP integration, particularly in California. California is a big chunk of our earnings and a big chunk of our sales, and that's gone live over the last 6 to 9 months. So we need to get through the issues of that over the next 4 to 6 months, and then have our sales team, you know, refocus their efforts on growing the top line rather than the core business. So I don't regret the focus we've had on our core business. It has slowed down our growth momentum, but I think that's a better outcome than us losing customers or disappointing customers by not being able to deliver to them. So I hope that answers, does that answer your question?
And your third bucket, OV? Because you said two buckets, manufacturing, then OPS, then the third bucket's got to be OV.
So OV, I'm really pleased with the growth there. You know, we recovered the effect of the Toys R Us inside 6 months, which I think is a pretty good response from the business there. And, you know, I'm optimistic about OV. You know, we've had a, as you and I have talked about this before, but you know, we've had our difficulties with the integration of those, but the momentum in that business from a sales point of view, as evidenced by the recovery from the TRU stuff, is positive. So, you know, I would expect that to continue to grow, and I don't see any reason why that shouldn't grow at, you know, a couple of times
GDP. So 2020, holding you to account now, we should expect a pretty good result coming out of North America on an underlying basis, probably by, once you get through this, probably got another 6 months of tough times. But 2020, we should start seeing, excluding the contributions from the acquisitions as well, but underlying, we should start seeing some improvement in 20. Is that a fair call?
Yeah, that's absolutely fair. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Thanks, Nigel.
Righto.
So, David, just one other thing I'd add. Just be careful when you're looking at economic data out of the US, because the macro data, I'd agree with you, the macro data is positive. But what we've certainly been consistent in saying this, for the last 12 or 18 months, I'd say most of the segments that we operate in aren't at that level, or the levels of the macro data. The macro data is very much service-orientated industries, and not surprisingly, most of those are packaging light. If you take those segments out of the macro data, you're left with fairly flat conditions, and that's what we would see is appropriate or relevant for the markets that we're servicing.
Yeah, but in your 2x GDP, though, how do you account for that? Like, if the North American GDP is 2.5, and your segments are only 0, does that mean that you come back to us and say, oh, yeah, but, you know, we did say 2x GDP, but the markets that we operate in aren't that? Is that just another opening for an excuse, or can we still hold you to 2x GDP?
That's a fair commentator. I'm not trying to over-engineer it. Just saying that our expectations are that the macro number is the number that we pursue in terms of growth, but I'm just letting you know that don't just assume, because the macro data says 3%, that's what we're riding on in the segments we provide or we serve.
Okay. Okay. Thanks, Nigel. Anyway. Thanks, Stuart.
Okay. Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Richard Johnson from CLSA. Please ask your question.
Thanks very much. Nigel, you highlighted your return on capital journey upfront in the presentation. Would it be fair to say that, particularly in relation to the domestic business, you're you know, probably a little ahead of where you thought you'd be if you go back to the beginning of your journey? And really my question is around what should we think of as an aspirational target for you in relation to return on capital, you know, where the journey's been, you know, pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, Richard, I think what we've learned over the last 5 and a bit years is as we've made investments and grown in confidence on those returns, then, you know, we've accelerated that. And you know, if you'd asked me 5 years ago, would I expect our returns to be where they are now, I probably wouldn't have thought they would have got there that quick. So, and as they get to 14s and 15s, and Richard, you've followed our former parent quite a long time, and you recall there was the holy grail of getting to 15%, which had been a focus, and certainly internally that's our you know, return benchmark that we've been targeting right from day one. And once you get to that, for it to be accretive after that, that, you know, by definition you've got to be delivering greater than 15%, and that's easier said than done, and, you know, in a low interest rate environment. What I would say is we're not going to conduct or make investments that are returns dilutive. So, you know, we continue to look at things that will increase our returns. We've got a journey to go to get to 15, which has been our target right from day one. After that, I mean, we'll have to have a think about it, Richard, but it gets harder, for sure.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I just think back to the early days when you, I think it was 12 or 13, I forget now exactly the number. Because of all the capital investment that went into B9. So it sort of underlines, you know, how far you've come. So, you know, even relatively small incremental investments can make a big difference.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
We're not done yet.
Yeah, good. And secondly, just on the Queensland fibre market, could you I mean, you mentioned the cattle turnoff and the benefit you got from that.
Yeah.
I just try, could you sort of put some context around that or put some perspective? Just, I mean, I don't know how big that is for you or how much do you think you benefited from it. So in a sense, what's the flip side of that? You know, what's at risk because of the lower cull in 2019-20?
Yeah, look, meat's an important segment, but not, it's, you know, from our fibre business point of view, it'd be less than 10% of our fibre business's sales overall. And if you look at what we understand has happened, it has been cattle that have been affected mainly in Queensland, and a number of those cattle are live export cattle rather than processed cattle. So what we don't know, you know, things on the weekend, Richard, in the media talked about 300,000 head loss. Now, what I don't know is the mix between live export and processed. Up in Queensland, in the western part of Queensland, it tends to be more of the live export than the processed. I think
we
mentioned it not because we're lying awake at night thinking it's going to have a material effect, but it's topical and clearly will have an effect on some of our customers in Queensland. Frankly, it's too early to tell because, you know, a lot of them are still isolated. I don't think it'll be material to us, but you know, we felt it prudent to mention it given, you know, it's been, you know, on the front page of the newspapers for the last week or 10 days, and inevitably somebody would have asked us the question. So at the moment we don't have much more than that, but I wouldn't be thinking it's going to be, you know, significant.
Okay, got it. And then can I just clarify, did the box plants in Townsville actually stop operating?
Yeah, it did, yeah. Yeah.
Is it operating now?
It is, yes. I mean, for two reasons we stopped. One is, or three actually, one is the number of our people couldn't get to the plant. Secondly, we couldn't get paper to make corrugated to the plant because of the flood waters. And third, we couldn't get to most of our customers to deliver product to them.
Right.
So we were down for 4 or 5 days.
Right. So your uncertainty as to the impact of that is just you don't know what's happened to the crop more than a production disruption, or you don't know whether you can make up those lost sales. How should we think about that?
You should think about it as an issue, but not a major one. I wouldn't be factoring material things into your models. You know, 5 days production at Townsville is disappointing, but it's not really going to make that much difference in the overall business. And if you look at the type of crops in that area, there's a lot of annual crops that we're at the end of berry fruit season, so not going to be that much affected, I wouldn't have thought. Maybe some of the field tomatoes, cucumbers, those type of things, we're at the back end of that season, so there might be some of that which will be lost. Not overall significance in the overall scheme of Aurora. And those annual crops will be planted again, you know, won't be affected. Bananas, they're used to the rain, and most of the flooding was south of the major growing areas in Tully and Innisfail. So, you know, it's early to tell, Richard, but I wouldn't be making big adjustments.
Got it. That's helpful. Thanks. And then just finally back on the US, would it be fair to say, or certainly it seems to us, that OV on an underlying basis, i.e. if you strip out Toys R Us, et cetera, was down year on year in the first half, and therefore it kind of disguises the performance of OPS, which might be a bit better than might appear at face value?
Oh, marginally that would be the case, but not significantly. Marginally.
Yeah, because I think it was down $1 million or so underlying. And I suppose the sort of add-on to that is, you know, I hear you what you say about OV, but it sounds like you're confident you're going to return the business to underlying growth going forward. Is that right?
Absolutely, yep. Yep.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much, and well done.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Owen Birrell from Goldman Sachs. Please ask your question.
Hi guys, I just wanted to drill down into North American margins a little bit more and really more the timing and magnitude of a recovery in the US. Let me start with the SAP rollout. So it's largely completed, and I'm just wondering the reversion in the business off that program. Is that purely sales growth led, or is there actually an overhead cost that, that effectively comes out of that, that business as we move forward?
Yep, so I'll have a go and then Stu can fill in the gaps. One of the things we've needed to do, Owen, as we've gone live at each site, is over-index with people as we get the processes settled down and both procurement, also purchasing and sales, operating under the new system. Just to give you background, you know, we were operating on a 20-something-year-old, heavily customized system, which provided a large amount of flexibility, but not the discipline that, say, an SAP will put in place. So from a warehousing point of view, there's a much more rigorous process. From a sales and procurement point of view, much more rigorous process. And we have dealt with that at each site as we've gone live by effectively putting additional heads, so additional people at the site for 3 to 4 months after go live to make sure that we deliver to our customers and don't have supply interruptions and those type of things. So you should expect as each site settles down, those costs will start winding back. Equally, the depreciation of the SAP system as we go live is increasing, and it's tasked to us to ensure that we get the savings on that plus some from efficiencies in procurement, in warehousing, you know, in processing and the like to deliver the savings. So yes, there are some additional costs which will wind back, and there are some inefficiencies in our business as we go live, and they will wind back, and then we're challenged to more than recover the additional depreciation at each of the sites. And Stu, do you want to add anything to that?
No, the only thing I'd add to that, Alan, is that part of the additional costs we've got are related to freight. It's not because of freight rates, it's more expedited freight because just to maintain service levels, et cetera, often where as the system settles down, we're not optimising or getting the lowest freight rates because we're often having to expedite it, and that comes at a penalty cost. So those issues, as the supply chain settles down post-go-live, those efficiencies should start to come back. But they're part of the transition costs associated with implementing the system.
Are you able to put a number around that, like an incremental cost of doing business that effectively over the next, what, 12, 24 months?
Yeah, so what we're...
come out?
Yeah, so it's called out in our information. Owen, it's about, across a full year, it's around about $3 million. So there was about $1.5 million in the second half of last year, and in this first half of this year, we had about $1.5 million.
Okay. Secondly, looking at the US business, you're talking about US printer upgrades commencing in the second half. Just wondering if you can give us a sense of the time frame of those upgrades. When do they complete, and how much CapEx are you spending on those upgrades?
Early days to give you a number on what we're planning to spend. We're currently doing the evaluations about what the best spend would be, and that includes evaluation of greenfields, brownfields, and upgrading of existing sites. So I wouldn't expect that we're going to make any material decisions before June. Most of those investment decisions are likely to be in the second half of calendar 19. Normally, there's a 9 to 12 month lead on the equipment being delivered and commissioned. So I would, that would stretch it out a bit to maybe the second half of next year from a commissioning point of view, and it's likely to be a 3 or 4 year program, just like we've had here in Australasia. So minimal effect this half, and you should see some of that starting to come through in fiscal 20.
And can I ask, are the payback expectations in Australia on that investment?
On average, 15.
So, yeah, we were targeting a gross return, Owen, and again, this is well in the market, of about 15% across that asset refresh program. And then what
payback? It's your payback then?
So it's 15%, it's going to be about 7 years.
Yeah.
And then what we've said also is part of, certainly with the level of competition in the fibre market in Australia, some of that inevitably will be shared with the market. So the, if you want to say what the net return is, it's probably more like 10%, which probably gives you a more like a 10-year payback.
Okay. But equally, they are sort of, a lot of them are sort of infrastructure type assets where we're going to have 20 or 30 year life from them.
Yeah.
Okay. And finally, on the US, you know, I guess some of the margin compression was around the sort of market conditions being quite tough, and a bit of a time lag on pricing pass-throughs. Do you have a sense on the margin compression recovery or the timing of the recovery on that margin compression? Are we likely to see that in the second half, or is it really more of an FY20 story?
I think it's probably more FY20, Alan, but just to perhaps do the quick waterfall on the margins in North America, it's really an OPS issue primarily. If they were around sort of 5.4, 5.5 is where we had got them to last year, and now they're around 5.1. Roughly 20 points of that delta is due to the pure maths of passing paper prices through to the market. So it impacts the sales line, but not the PBIT line, obviously. And then there's roughly 10 points, which is just the, as we're onboarding Bronco and Pollock, their initial return on sales is a bit lower than where we've been, so that's about another 10 points. And then the market issues around competition and all the rest of it is another sort of 10 points to give you an idea.
Okay. So assuming no change in competition, you should probably get that 20 basis points of paper price pass-through coming in FY20, from what you're suggesting. Bronco Pollock effectively comes through with the synergies to get it back to your, you know, intended return profile. So again, it's probably 24 months on that.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I'd just say to you, the paper, unless something changes in the paper prices, that 20 points is effectively an ongoing story. It won't reverse unless paper prices revert.
Okay, and on top of all of this, I guess, is some fixed cost leverage on if you're able to drive stronger revenues going forward as well.
Yep. So I'd say, our target for OPS is still to get to 5.5%. We got to 5.4. Okay. We didn't quite get to 5.5, but that's our sort of 2 to 3 year journey from here, is how I would describe that, for all the things you talked about.
Excellent. That's enough for me. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Alan.
Your next question comes from the line of Keith Chow from Evans & Partners. Please ask your question.
Oh, thank you. Good morning, Nigel and Stuart. Just a quick follow-up on North America. I think in years gone by or periods gone by, we've spoken about 20 to 30 basis point margin expansion, over the coming periods. But I think given the margin pressures that you're seeing in the markets, that's unlikely to happen. I'm just wondering whether, you know, there is still an expectation beyond the 5.5% target for OPS that you'd get margin expansion beyond that, particularly in the context that, you know, market competition is pretty strong at the moment.
Look, Keith, I think the best way I could answer that is probably just to follow on from the answer I just gave Owen. I mean, we had indicated that the target for OPS was to get to 5.5. As I said, we never quite got there. We got to 5.4, and we did certainly indicate that the journey from there was going to be slower than it had been to get to from where we were to that sort of mid-5s. So I think the best way to think about it, Keith, is that 5.5 is still our target for now, but I'd say from where we are, that's still going to be a 2 to 3 year journey from where we are now to get to there.
Okay, so there's no point in thinking about aspirational targets beyond the 5.5 for the time.
I wouldn't say there's no point, but I'd say to you that there's still best in class margins of Bunzl, and they're still above 6%, so it's not impossible to get there. But I think for us, I mean, aspirationally, of course, we would aspire to be as good as them. But I think for the near term, I think it's more appropriate to say, well, we can only deal with where we are. And there are some initiatives that we've got, which we covered on Owen's responses, that would see us on a journey to get to that 5.5% over the next 2 to 3 years.
Okay, thank you. And then just a quick question on working capital. I think there was a comment made that Aurora's provided some extended terms for corporate accounts. Is that going to be an ongoing phenomena across the entire book, or are those extended terms temporary?
No, I think that I'd say that, I mean, that's really the pressure from larger customers, which has been, I mean, I suppose has been progressively impacting us over the last, I'd say, 2 to 3 years. So, it's unlikely that a single account is going to make a huge difference to us, but that is a pressure that comes from dealing with larger accounts. Now, obviously, what we do is share the love with our vendors the same as our customers share it with us. Is that one of the ways we try and minimise the impact. So it's unlikely to have a significant impact in any period, but it is an ongoing pressure of doing business with larger corporations.
Okay, thanks very much.
Your next question comes from the line of Daniel Kang from Citigroup. Please ask your question.
Thank you. Good morning, guys. Nigel, I just wondered if you can talk us through the normal seasonality of the overall business. I mean, just looking at your history, it does look like second half EBIT is typically marginally softer. And having called out Queensland floods and the North American conditions, do you see that this year's, that seasonal softness in the second half should play out, or would Pollock and recent acquisitions offset that seasonal softness?
Yeah, good question. I think last year, if I remember correctly, the first half was 52-48, first half, second half. I'd expect that the net we should be much closer to 50-50 this year. For the reason that traditionally it's normally softer in the second half, but we do have the benefit of a full half from Pollock, and we only had 1 month in the first half, and Bronco's a lot smaller, so probably less significant. But we'll probably be closer to 50-50 than we were last year. Last year was 52-48, so it mightn't be exactly 50-50, but it'll certainly be closer to that in fiscal 19.
Got it. Thanks for that. You made the comment that clearly the focus in the near term is going to be on integrating new acquisitions.
Yep.
Makes total sense. How long do you expect that period of focus to last before you open up to considering new acquisitions? And just on that, how do the investment opportunities set look like at present? You know, given the challenging market conditions that you speak of, are vendors becoming more realistic now with regards to price expectations?
Sure. Let me answer the second part of that question first. We have seen a moderating of vendor expectations. I think we said probably 12 or 18 months ago that we were happy to be patient because prices were in our view too high. There's no doubt that prices have and expectations have wound back, you know, half a turn or a turn, and potentially might have a little bit further to go. So it's a time, I think, to be disciplined and to, as it always is, but to be disciplined and you know, make sure you don't overpay. But I would expect that moderating to continue, maybe not too much more, but it certainly come off. From our perspective, I would have thought the focus for integration will go for the next 6 to 9 months at least. And that doesn't mean we won't start looking inside that time, because as you would appreciate from the time you first look at something to when you transact, that can take anywhere between, you know, 3 and 12 months, and sometimes longer. So you've got to keep the deal flow going. But what I don't want to have happen is that I want the operational management distracted by getting involved in due diligence processes or looking at other opportunities, because you run the risk of, you know, the shiny new toy getting all of the focus, whereas our job, we've spent $140 million Aussie dollars on the two acquisitions. Our job in the calendar 19 is to make sure we deliver on that. So focus, I would have thought, 6 to 9 months, and then we can have a look at it. But you shouldn't expect further bolt-ons in North America in this half, I wouldn't have thought.
Thanks for the colour, Nigel. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Niraj Shah from Morgan Stanley. Please ask your question.
Good morning, guys. Just a couple of quick points of clarification. I guess firstly, it looks like there was a close to $4 million benefit in the half from higher export prices. There's no sort of mention of that in the prospectus for the remainder of the year, so I was just wondering how we should be thinking about that in the second half.
Yeah, I think I can answer that in two sort of geographies, Niraj. North America, certainly prices were higher, and there is talk of there a little bit of softening there. Certainly in our internal outlook, we would expect that to soften a little, not a lot, but a little. In Asia, as we've talked about before, lots of volatility in OCC prices, and as a consequence, lots of volatility in export prices. Our view at the moment is we would see OCC prices coming back a bit and export prices coming back a bit into Asia, but that's a notoriously difficult market to predict.
Yep. Okay. And just my second question, and this is more of a 2020 issue, but you've provided the sensitivities there on gas contracts that expire in December of 2019.
Yeah.
How should we be sort of thinking about that? Like, where is your current average price relative to market, or any sort of parameters, additional parameters you could provide would be helpful?
What I'd say at the moment is we've got good pricing until the end of the year. I think it's unlikely that we will be able to secure gas at our current pricing level, so there will be a cost up in calendar 20. At what level, hard to tell at the moment. As you would expect, we are well into negotiations, and a bit early to tell. We'll probably have a better idea in a couple of months.
Understood. Great. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Niraj.
Your next question comes from the line of John Petrell from Macquarie. Please ask your question.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Hey, John. Good, thanks,
John.
Just had two questions on OV and then one on Australia, please. Just in terms of OV, you mentioned wins from new accounts. So the recent wins have been more from new than existing customers?
Largely, John, yeah. Yeah, but it hasn't been all new. It's been a mixture, but the majority has come from new accounts, yes.
Okay. And are there more potential wins in the offing? I mean, I'm sure you hope so, but are there sort of opportunities there in the next 6 months? And just sort of trying to think through, is that the sort of, the next sort of driver of growth for OV there, sort of building on those wins that you've had, or is it more sort of cost out and integration into the broader business?
Yeah, look, I think when you get a new customer, John, they very seldom give you all of their business straight away, particularly in that part of the market. So, the challenge for us, or the opportunity for us, is to deliver on their expectations or hopefully exceed their expectations, and then we grow share of wallet with those customers. And to date, I think we've done a good job in that regard. If I look at the medium term for OV, the road to optimal returns is going to come from top line growth, not cost out. You can only cut your way to prosperity to a point. So there are opportunities still in what we're doing, and certainly the addition of the two Texas-based businesses will help the large operation we've got in Texas from a procurement and a cost point of view. But the predominant driver will be top line growth more than cost out, John.
Thank you. And just in relation to your Australian or Australasian business, obviously sustainability is a big focus at the moment. Are you seeing a substrate shift here in terms of greater use of fibre packaging and cans? I mean, appreciate, it's something that's evolving. Was there much benefit from that in this result, or is it mainly still to come?
I think it's still to come, John. We're doing a few trials. With plastic replacement in areas like pre-packed apples, with mushrooms, with berry fruit. If you think about all those plastic punnets you see in the supermarket, for example, so a range of trials. Some of those have been, certainly from an apple point of view, have been in the market. It's early days. In addition, we've got a recycled, you know, a fibre-based plant pot, which will replace all those plastic plant pots that you buy from a, you know, a Bunnings or from a nursery. And we've been developing that the last couple of years. So positive signs, but it's early days. You know, I think that the market conditions are such that that there are opportunities there, and our R&D team are certainly spending a lot of time on that, working with our customers and their customers in that regard, John. So that's probably a medium-term build of any consequence rather than short-term, but I wouldn't want you to think for a minute that we're not spending time and money on it, because we certainly are. And the second part of your question, I've now just forgotten what it was. What was it? What was the second part?
Oh, that, I think that that
does that answer it?
Yeah. Yeah, that's fine. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, John.
Your next question comes from the line of Grant Slade from Morningstar. Please ask your question.
Oh, good morning, Nigel and Stuart. Just one from me on Australasian volumes in the half. Sales growth was 3.7% ex aluminium, so segment volumes likely grew at slightly below 2% in the period. Just wondering if you're able to comment at all on each, on how each of fiberglass and can volumes individually performed. Thanks.
Yeah, well, you go. No, you should. I've been talking enough. Yeah.
Grant, I'd say to you that the growth of that sort of 3 to 4% was relatively consistent across the Australasian perimeter. So now it's not going to be uniform across every business unit, but across fibre and beverage, that was pretty much what we saw. Fibre might have been a bit stronger than beverage, but some of that in fibre there is recovering some of the increased costs associated with energy and paper, et cetera, et cetera. So there's no significant difference in either of the segments we have. I'd see that that sort of 3.5% is pretty steady across both.
Okay, great. Thanks. That's helpful.
No problem.
Your next question comes from the line of Nathan Riley from UBS. Please ask your question.
Morning, gents. Just a couple from me. Firstly, just on your comments on these market conditions being challenged in both North America and Australia, that does suggest there's some cause or concern for you there. So could you just give us a little bit more detail on how you see those conditions potentially influencing your operations, you know, whether it be a volume impact that you need to manage or an operating cost impact that you need to manage as well, so just some specifics around that. And then finally, on the weather, you know, hearing you on the issues there, just given recent heavy rainfalls and also drought conditions on the East Coast, there's not much you can do about those, but how do you adjust your operations to manage for that situation?
Yeah, certainly. Let me deal with the challenging conditions first. I'd be reasonably sure we've been saying the same thing for the last few years. So I don't want you to think that this is materially different from the way it's been historically. If you look at the last 3 or 4 years, we've had energy costs which have, at least effectively for us, more than doubled. You know, so the energy increment that we're paying today over 4 years ago is north of $50 million a year more for our gas and electricity in Australia than we were. So, you know, the challenging conditions are consistent with what we've seen. I don't think they're any better, nor are they any particularly worse than we've experienced before. In North America, certainly I think things have come off a little from 12 months ago. You know, 12 months ago, there was a lot of positivity in the economy. There was the sugar hit of the tax decreases and the like. But if you look at the North American economy now, you had 800,000 people not paid for a month. You've got the uncertainty with the trade tensions with China and others. You've got increased costs of Chinese imports, which is a big input into the North American market. So you've got a little bit of consumer confidence, perhaps not what it was 12 or 18 months ago. But, you know, our job is not to complain about the conditions, it's to deal with them. I think we have done that over the past 3 or 4 years, and we would plan to do that for the next 3 or 4. On your particular question about floods and droughts, I think without being inappropriate, we normally see a climatic event of some kind every couple of years in Queensland, and normally it's more normal it's cyclones and those type of things further north, and so this time it's floods around Townsville. So how we deal with that is our first priority is to make sure we help our customers, because often their short-term priority is to get what remaining stock they've got, be it fruit and produce or meat, to the market before it deteriorates. So we do that in times of cyclones. We've actually had our people going out and working with the farmers on their plants, on their farms, to help them get back up and running. And then we'll look at the load mix. This is particularly in fibre. We'll look at the load mix across our national network and optimise the load mix based on what we see demands. So, for example, if Townsville has got less demand for the next 3 months, then we might make some product in Townsville that traditionally we would have made in Brisbane and ship that to the north of Brisbane customers rather than work on overtime in Brisbane, for example. So the advantage of having a national network is you can optimise your mix across the overall infrastructure.
Okay, thanks for that.
Okay, thank you.
There are no further questions at this time. I would now like to hand the conference back to today's presenter. Please continue.
I'm conscious, everybody, we've been going an hour and a half. I really would like to thank you for your interest and for your questions. If you do have anything else as you go through today or tomorrow, please don't hesitate to give us a call, as always. But in the meantime, thanks for your interest.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may now all disconnect.